Yeah, I think that they might also be the same store as Hardee's.
Okay. And that also is gone.
Okay, yeah. Well, Dairy Queen is another one. Chevron, Texaco, Ritz Camera. All these guys are doing these pilot tests all over the country. And as you start to look at that, it becomes this convenient factor that they start pitching at you, which is, oh, yeah, this is going to be so convenient for you. You're not going to have to mess around with that messy cash or that checkbook. You're just going to walk in with your smart card, wave it by the screen with your product, and you get to go. It's that simple and that fast. Who could complain about something like that?
The one thing that we do have around here that's actually somewhat popular is the mobile speed pass.
Yeah, the speed pass, it's a little thing you put in your keychain, and you actually wave it at the gas tank.
At the gas pump.
Well, the gas pump, yeah.
Right.
You wave it at the gas pump, and you don't have to go in and see the cashier now.
Right. Now, having said that, where does the money come from after you wave your key? Where does that debit itself from?
You can link it to your bank account. You can link it to a credit card.
Bingo. And that's the key to that whole thing, guys. It's a convenience factor. Everyone is going to be getting into this convenience factor act, and it's not a game. It's something that they're actually perpetrating on purpose. The corporations are probably getting kickbacks of some sort to implement these from the corporations that are offering it, like American Express. Well, American Express, of course, is going to be one of the larger institutions that we will call and refer to as a banking institution. They are in the business of loaning money.
Mm-hmm.
That's their whole purpose in life.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, the way that they make their money is by gaining interest from what they loan to you, or, more importantly, from being able to usurp your actual property from you when you cannot pay on those loans.
Well, in regards to convenience, Michael, one personal note from my experience the other day at HD, that has got to be the most inconvenient thing I've ever dealt with in my entire life. I was so angry by the time I left there. I've done this before, and the people down here in this basement know, I will not go back to a place if I have to go through that much garbage just to purchase some windshield washer fluid for my automobile.
I'm with you 100%.
Well,
remember a minute ago we were talking about the fact that the government isn't going to come out with a marketing blitz to tell us about their plans?
Yes.
Did you guys catch anything about the Federal Reserve going 100% cashless as far as them transferring the nation's money supply back and forth between the banks? Did you guys catch that?
I thought they had done that about 5 or 6 years ago, so I must be... I don't know. I thought I had read something that they were planning on it, so...
Well, they've talked about the plan. August is when it went into actual implementation, and not a word was said. I didn't catch it on... And I tell you guys, I scan a lot of news sites, and I mean a lot of mainstream news sites, as well as a lot of blogs. So when I'm standing around and I go, wait a minute, how did I stumble onto this, and this is something that's this old, and I don't mean it was that old for me, but at the time it was about a month before I caught it. And with little fanfare, what happened is the Federal Reserve began transferring the nation's full-blown money supply over an Internet-based system. Now, this is wide open to a lot of different things. Number one, it makes the U.S. banking system wide open to cyber threat. And you start to think about the fact that some of these hackers out there are pretty talented, critters.
Mm-hmm.
And if a security breach were to strike, something like that, it would strike the very heart of the financial world. Money would stop moving around. Financial system would literally start to collapse. Chaos would ensue. By itself, that's pretty frightening.
Absolutely.
The possibility would exist. But again, it's a simple matter of the process of saying, we are moving cashless. Everyone will be cashless at some point.
One of the things that I put in my... a journal entry about cashless, because I know you were on Coast to Coast two Wednesdays ago or something.
Yeah.
And I remember from that entire segment, that entire part, your part of the show, was for some reason Hilly didn't seem all that concerned. He was like, oh, well, it sounds really like a cool thing. I don't understand why it's scary. So I wrote in my personal journal on our website,
mm-hmm,
why I think it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple reasons. And one of them is not just, well, obviously the biggest reason is you lose your identity. You are now some number in a computer somewhere attached to some other SQL tables with money amounts in it, and positions where you were when you bought things, when you did things.
Sure.
You're there.
Privacy's gone.
Your privacy is completely gone. And that's the biggest thing. The second thing is, the government's going to have control over not only what the information that you're generating by living, you know, purchasing things and doing financial transactions, but they're also going to have control over the supply then. For example, and this is the example I use in my journal. You weren't affected by this, Michael, but do you remember when the multi-state blackout happened?
Yeah.
We were under emergency or something like that. I don't know, some kind of emergency alert or something.
They put curfews up. They made sure the cops were everywhere.
Curfews and things like that. What if they decided, okay, we are going to halt. Now you have to put yourself in a cashless society. We're going to halt sales. We're going to halt sales of gasoline. We're going to halt sales of, you know, that kind of thing during this emergency, because people should be stuck in their homes anyway during this.
So, generally speaking, you'd be on martial law.
Right, but they could easily halt sales. So that's stopping the supply of something because you can't pay for it anymore. Because you go up to the thing, you've got your 5 gallons of gas in a container, and you go up to the thing and you say, I want to pay for this now, and you hold out your hand, and the person's like trying to wave the wand over it, and it's going, you know, transaction denied, transaction denied.
Sure. Yeah.
There, you can't buy that all of a sudden.
Sure.
Same thing with these reactionary things. Like, for example, great idea, and I made this up in my journal, and I think it's very realistic. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, I'm all for them. I think that organization is terrific. Mm-hmm. I actually know the lady, or I've talked to her on the phone, the lady who runs the one in Mount Clemens, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, but let's say, for example, they decide to lobby Congress that any one person should only be able to buy a 6-pack a day.
Right.
Because it's good for you.
Well, right, and understand, though, at the same time, though, and that's how this country works, is it would be my job, then, if I want to be able to purchase more than a 6-pack a day, to lobby against that. And, I mean, I hope that there are groups out there that are willing to lobby against anyone that's trying to usurp our freedoms, because the bottom line is, and, you know, Franklin said it best, is anybody who is willing to give up some of their freedoms for a little bit of security will deserve neither and lose both.
Damn right.
And absolutely true.
And it is. And the thing about that is that when now you and I decide that we're going to do something like that, we can walk over to the Capitol Hill and start arguing our points with them. What if, however, we've all been microchipped and they decide we don't want to hear your point of view anymore and they simply tell us back down or we're turning your chip off. No more food for you. Forget about medicine for the kids.
Right, and they could do it in a cashless society. Because
it would be so much easier for them to gain physical control over us, because we have, at that point, very limited access to working outside of that society. And I'll tell you, what it all boils down to, boys, is they're trying to steal your money. And they're not comfortable with getting a little of it, because they've been doing that for a long time. They want the rest of it. And what I mean is, according to the Fed's own numbers, if not your statistics or my statistics, but theirs, the U.S. dollar in the last 50 years has lost 92% of its buying power. There's 8 cents left on that dollar over the last 50 years. Now, you start to look at that, and that's about 2 cents a year, roughly, on average, if we were to break that down, which means we've got, you know, 8 cents left. We've got 4 years here before that dollar would be completely bankrupt. And realizing now that the dollar's buying power is collapsing much faster than it was in any time in its history, so that obviously is a misnomer to assume that you would have those 4 years. That dollar is damn near dead, and it's going to be dead within a very brief period of time. And people think, well, what happened? I mean, what do you mean we lost the buying power of the dollar? And what does that even mean? Well, it means that it takes now a lot more of the weaker dollars for you to buy any products.
Mm-hmm.
That you, in turn, have to work a lot harder to get a lot more of those weaker dollars in order to keep up with your payments on the various things that you've now loaned out from the Fed. They've loaned you your house. They've loaned you your car. And the best way to give that analogy is to equate that for folks who might have heard back in the good old days when you needed a job and you could get one at the coal mines. Now, the problem with that all was, well, you went to the coal mines and you said, I need a job. And they looked at you and said, well, you're a strapping young lad. We're going to give you that job. Do you have any tools so you can mine coal? And you'd say, well, no, I don't have anything. I don't have a job. I don't have any money. Not a problem, because we're going to give you the job. And over here at the company store, you can get the tools necessary for you to mine coal. And we'll loan them to you based on the fact that we know at the end of the week when you get your pay, you'll pay us on that loan. And, of course, if you need food or you need clothing or anything else, you can get all that at the company store. We'll give you a credit line. Not a problem, because we know you're going to be good for it because you're working for us. So you would, of course, do that in order for you to have that job. You'd take that loan. And then the company store, of course, knew full well that with the wages you were earning from the coal mine job, you would never be able to pay off those products. And you would always be in debt to the company store, and therefore you could never leave that job because you always had to pay off that debt. And so it just went further and further and further downward as you continually tried to work to pay off that debt. But as you did so, you still went further and further and further in debt no matter what you tried to do. And that's exactly what happened in 1913 when a banking cartel group got together and said, hey, let's use that model of the coal mine, only we'll apply that to the entire nation, and we will make them become our slaves, and they will work all day long to simply provide us with their own wealth and their own labor, and we will have to pay them nothing. And so that's when the Federal Reserve was born, 1913. My favorite phrase, because people were stumbled or tricked into the belief that this was an okay entity to be coining the money when it said quite clearly in the Constitution that Congress was the only one that had authority and that it had to be made out of gold or it had to be made out of silver. The Federal Reserve said, we can do this out of paper, and as long as the countrymen believe that we are a government agency, it will be fine, so we will call ourselves the Federal Reserve. The favorite phrase, no more federal than Federal Express, and they have no reserves.
And that's what a lot of people, that's what a lot of people don't understand. They don't look at that dollar that's in their pocket, or the numerous dollars they have in their pocket, all shapes, different sizes and whatnot, 50s and 20s. They look at that as the bottom line. This is what tells it. The idea of a dollar, and you can learn this in any macroeconomics class if you go to college, they'll tell you this, is that dollar is backed by gold. Supposedly backed by gold.
Well, no, they went away from the gold.
I'm just saying. That was the basis of it.
You're quite correct. The constant.
That was the basis of it.
That it's got to be made out of gold. Not backed, not a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can be a cast to actually be manufactured from gold or from silver.
Okay.
Well, then that's a perfect example. The dollar itself is a perfect example, because what they did is, they said, okay, it's going to be more convenient if you take this, piece of paper mm-hmm. to the store rather than
this hunk of gold.
This thing that says, I have a dollar's worth of gold. Uh-huh. And you go to the store and you try and buy your milk, eggs, and bread with this. And then that's more convenient than carrying around,
it's lighter. It doesn't weigh as much.
Right. It's lighter. It doesn't weigh as much. You can easily identify it. It's accepted at every retailer everywhere. It's much more convenient. And then
you can fold it.
And now look what's happened to the dollar. Now it's no longer backed by gold. Right. It's become almost worthless. It's losing value very, very rapidly in world economics. And it's become basically worth only the paper it's printed on.
More or less.
And then, now, if you take that exact same scenario and put it, ahead, 70 years, 80 years?
Yes.
To cashless society, it's more convenient if you just have this little identifier either implanted in your body or on a card.
Mm-hmm.
One more time, and I'll tell you something else, guys. This is how they're going to fool you into believing that this is the thing that we need to do, because it's not just going to be the convenience factor. That's going to be a big chunk of it. But what they're also going to do is they're going to make the claim that this is to stop counterfeiting. And what they will do, this is how wonderful this is, they let the dollar collapse, it starts rapidly declining, and it's really in the news. And everybody's aware of it because everybody's talking about the decline of the dollar right now. Boy, the dollar's really weak right now, and so on and so forth. And they use that and step right in and say, listen, part of the problem with this declining dollar is because we are being flooded with counterfeit currency. And the more currency that's actually in the system, the weaker each unit of currency will become. We have got to stem this ding. Counterfeiting. We tried in 1980 with the Omnibus Drug Smuggling Act,
mm-hmm.
and that didn't work. So we tried again with the Know Your Customer rule, and now, of course, we've got all the bankers being spies. That didn't work. So now we started with the idea of changing the money. We'll take the currency itself and we'll throw some security features in it, the little metal strip and so on, some other security features, watermarks. And that was the first one that caught my attention with, at that point, knowing it was a BS story. And that was this. When they said they were changing the currencies, and out came the new 100, and Ben Franklin had a brand new portrait, and it was big and bold, and it looked really nice, and and then out comes the 50, and then the 20, and I'm looking at that, and I remember them saying, and now the next series will be the 10s, 5s, and 1s. And I thought, who in the hell would actually sit down and counterfeit $1 bills?
Right.
You have to counterfeit yourself a garage full of the things, and then what are you going to do, walk out with three or four suitcases full of $1 bills to go buy a couch? That became ridiculous, and I knew at that point there was something else going on besides the fact they were trying to thwart counterfeiters.
Okay, so that on that basis... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, next comes the next currency change. Well, that one wasn't working, so now we're going to do the ones with the new colored currencies.
Yeah, then those are pretty.
What's going to come next? They're going to flood out the next... They're going to take that colored currency, the pink and the...
Yeah, the pretty
bill,
$20 bills.
And we'll keep those here, and they will have a different currency that's already in play now in other nations outside of our own, and it will have a separate value. And that will affect the trade imbalance. You watch how this goes. And at that point, the next thing that they're going to say is, we can't stop this erosion of our dollar. So we're now going to change it to a cashless society. We're going to get rid of cash altogether so it can't be counterfeited, and we'll put it all on this nice little card that everyone will keep in their wallets or carry around. And then, of course, we'll come to the next phase. Darn, we never thought of this one. Looks like these things can be lost or stolen. Better actually put that chip right in you. And that way, nobody can take it. Nobody can use any fraudulent activity with your chip because it's you. You have to walk up and wave it to the scanner.
Well, what makes me think of the idea I have now is with this evolution of currency we've seen in this country. I mean, we've basically just done a timeline from the beginning of the last century to present day, more or less. Has this been in the works for that long?
1913.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, has the American dollar...
About 1913 is that what they didn't have in the works was the technology. That was something that came along to them recently, so to speak, that made things a lot more attractive to accelerate things. And I want to just point one thing out about that Federal Reserve System that was born in 1913, because the Federal Reserve Bank or the Federal Reserve System, it's a private corporation, and we've mentioned that. So just think about that. That's a private company like the 7-Eleven Corporation. So imagine the government just saying, hey, from now on, 7-Eleven can manufacture the currency of the country, and that'll be just fine by everybody here. Black's Law Dictionary defines the Federal Reserve System as a network of 12 central banks to which most national banks belong and which state chartered banks may belong. Membership rules require investment of stock and minimum reserves. So basically, the privately owned banks own the stock of the Fed. Now you've got private banks owning a private corporation, manufacturing the money, loaning it to the government. Interest-free, of course, or dang close to it. So you start to see how this breaks down, and it really does become something of a wake-up call when you start to realize, going back to that coal mine explanation of how they're doing it to us. You guys got a job, and when you got your jobs, when you left mom and dad's house, you got your jobs, and you didn't own houses of your own. Most guys didn't anyway, unless you were given it by the, you know, the silver spoon method. Most guys had to go out and get a job and said, well, I'm moving out, I got to get an apartment. They didn't have any credit, and they build up that credit, and then the credit card companies start going, oh, it looks like we want to make sure that we get a credit card out to Scott today.
Oh, yeah.
You need a credit card, and you know what? While we're at it, let's get Doug one. The next thing you know, you guys are getting 4,000 credit card offers in your mailbox coming right out of high school every day.
That's an average month in my house now still. I mean,
exactly. You're being indoctrinated to the idea that this is a good idea. Now you can, hey, you guys, you're at your sucky apartment, and there's no furniture, and you got no TV, maybe that 13-inch black and white your dad threw away, and on top of that, you got nothing, no stereo equipment. But with this beautiful credit card, you can have all that tomorrow.
Suddenly you got a 42-inch widescreen.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, and you only have to pay this tiny, bitty, tiny, eeny-weeny amount, and you get the idea that that's done, and that establishes your credit. The next thing is, let's get a house. Go to the bank, and the bank says, sure, I'll loan you $180,000 or $200,000. Get a house. We want you to. And the reason you do that is because you've got that job, and the economy's going great, and everybody's feeling super comfortable because they've built us into this wonderful economy. They do it by the series of tax breaks. and everybody starts spending the money, and slowly but surely this thing gets going again, and pretty soon the economy's cruising, and then all of a sudden you're into this wonderful economic boom after about a five-year period, or maybe 8 years, you might see from the initial tax breaks that occurred. It's the trickle-down economics theory. It's an actual theory, and guess what? It really works. It will let that trickle until all of a sudden it booms into the economy, and everybody's creating new jobs with these businesses they've opened and so on, and everybody's got a job. The economy's cruising. Consumer confidence is flying high. Unemployment is down. There's no inflation, and people get comfortable, and when they get comfortable, they get cocky. And
oh,
they
yeah.
They're thinking, you know what? I'm driving this crappy little beat-up pile of dung over here, this four-cylinder, and I'm going to jump out, and I'm going to buy myself a Lexus. I deserve it. And not only that, I've got a great job, and the economy's growing well. I'm going to be just fine when I do that, and I'll add on to this debt, and I'll add on to that debt, and I'll add. And then they pull the rug out. Whoop, in come the taxes. They raise it. The economy dives. And at that point, the second that economy dives, nobody can make their payments anymore. And one of two things has to happen. Either you got to work a lot harder now, take out that second job in the afternoon after your eight-hour shift ends,
mm-hmm.
and that's just so you can keep up, or you will begin to lose the property that you've worked for and put the equity into. So they wanted you to have that property. They wanted you to work on it, and they wanted you to make those payments so that they could then at some point walk right in and say, no, sorry, you couldn't make your payments, Scott. Thanks for the house. And then they resell it to your buddy Doug. Starts all over again.
Yep.
Meantime, they're taking our labor from us, which is our actual wealth. That's what I can create. I can create wealth with my labor. They want me to work in the country because it makes them wealthy. I get nothing. I struggle to just barely keep my head above water with two or three jobs. My wife's working, and everybody is just barely making their payments on the interest of all the things that they got in that wonderful last booming economic period. And so at that point, they literally walk away with your wealth. And I'll tell you something. It's something that we were warned about a long, long time ago. One of the founding forefathers, as a matter of fact, one who's oft-quoted, who had one of the best quotes ever about the Federal Reserve long before it could have possibly ever even been an idea, and that was Thomas Jefferson. He said this, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
Oh.
Now, if that is not the biggest warning of don't you ever let a Federal Reserve be born, he said it long before it happened, and it did occur.
And it's happening around us. It really is. And I mean, I'm one person that can tell you that for real. The feeling, the effects of this squeezing, this tightening around you.
No question.
As you live, you know.
Well, you actually went through
that.
Well,
you're not the only one.
Oh, I know I'm not.
I'll tell you what, you're either in that group or you're with the elitists, or you've been allowed to make that level of economic freedom,
mm-hmm.
and you have no idea that the elitists even exist or that this is going on. And as far as you're concerned, what? I don't know anything that's going on. I got a red Saab in the driveway, my white picket fence, I got my dog, the two kids on the swing set, and Monday Night Football's still coming, so it must be okay.
Well, yeah, and that's what's used just to keep you tamed down and keep you from not thinking at all.
Make sure he's got a couple of cold ones in the fridge. He'll be fine.
Exactly, exactly. And that's
there's another quote of Jefferson's that really hit a home run, and that's generally the two main quotes that really spell it out. And this is this one, which is another killer. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. Already they've raised up a moneyed aristocracy that has set the government at defiance. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs.
And that's the truth, right there.
Take money back from the Fed and restore the manufacture of money back to the people where it belongs.
Why then don't the congressmen who we elect, why don't they go and do that?
Because they're elitists.
There are three types of congressmen.
Liars, liars, and other liars?
Pretty close to that. Three type of congressmen, there's liars, liars, and then there's another one. But I'll tell it to you like this. The first group, and this is probably the largest portion, a bunch of knotheads who have no idea what's going on around them. They show up for their government check every day, and they get all the government holidays off. They get fat pensions padded for themselves. They get some vacation. They get free donuts down at the bakery.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that group. And that's the only reason they're there. They're career politicians. The next group, and that's a tiny group, a very small group, and that's the group that is with this global government. That's the group that's with the elitists. These are members. societies of Skull and Bones. They're members of the CFR. They're members of the Trilaterals Commission. They're members of the Bilderberger Group. And there's a very small, very select group of congressmen and senators in that group. And then there's the other group, and that's a group of one. His name is Congressman Ron Paul, and he's in Texas. And he is the guy that stands up and says stuff like, say no to the cashless society. Say no to the Federal Reserve. Say no to the illegal IRS. Say no. And that's the gentleman that is willing to stand up, and I'll tell you, he gets reelected session after session after session, and this is the one champion that we've got down there. And the problem with that is the rest of them all look at him like he's a kook.
Why can't then, like, for example, Steve Forbes? Is that his name? He ran for Forbes. What's his name?
Forbes.
He ran for president, not this past election, but the one before it, or he wanted to.
Are we talking about, he's the little guy.
No, that's...
Not Perot.
Not Perot. No, Forbes.
Yep, Perot. Okay, give me more on it.
This guy's on TV, too.
Steve Forbes.
I think it's Steve Forbes. He's rich.
Oh, Forbes, yeah, absolutely.
He
wanted to abolish the IRS and go to a flat tax.
I would love that. A lot of his ideas were fantastic, but
I agree with that 100% that the ideas sounded good to me, too, but the question is, why didn't he come out and explain... The reason that we want to go to this system of a flat tax is because we want to abolish the IRS, and we also want to abolish the Federal Reserve and give the money back to the people like it's supposed to. You know, if he's that kind of a guy, then he stands up like one of the founding forefathers and says, this is what's real, this is what's true. Instead, he's a career politician-sounding guy like all the rest that comes out and says, hey, I got a couple of different ideas that are going to work out a lot better than some of these other places. But again, same type of deal. He is one of the elite members of society.
Yeah, he would be.
He knows what's going on, and is, you know, the Forbes family is probably quite heavily involved with these CFRs and with the trilaterals and so on.
Well, undoubtedly, but even at the same time, though, all these, this is what I can't put together yet, and that's why you're here. People who are already wealthy with American money and obviously foreign money, and they have things. They have paintings. They have, you know, valuable things, okay? So we're talking the Forbeses, the Kennedys,
yep.
the Bill Gateses of the world, which he must have been an aberration. All these people with all this money, the people you see in Fortune magazine, you know, the top 100 or whatever.
Yep.
These folks, why wouldn't they be jumping up and down screaming, saying, these dollars that I've earned are now worth pennies?
How do you know that Bill Gates didn't do that? And then 2 seconds later, the elitist underworld government society turned around and said, antitrust suit time. You sure you want to open your mouth again, Bill?
Well, here's an interesting
question. And you know what? That particular antitrust suit was not even worth the paper that it was printed
on. And handily went away, too, didn't it?
It went away. That's why.
And quietly went away. Isn't that funny how it quietly went away? No fanfare. You just start hearing a little bit less and a little bit less. The articles were a little bit smaller. Then they were on the fourth page. Then they were under the fold on the fourth page. Then they were on the 34th page, and they were literally quarter paragraphs.
We had an interesting question in the chat room, actually. One of our listeners wanted to know, you know, based on what we've been talking about, why would the government then give people the ability, why does the government let us file for something like bankruptcy, for example, where you would file for bankruptcy?
Well, they just changed all that.
They're working on changing the laws about bankruptcy so that you can't just file for bankruptcy on the items that you've got personally.
Okay.
And the obvious is because they want to be able to usurp more of the product, more of your wealth, and you can protect some of those things with bankruptcy. But remember, what they truthfully want is not to have you truthfully bankrupted. They might want to have you bankrupted as far as the court system might concern you, but remember, they want you back in that society where you're going to get better and you're going to begin taking those loans again. They don't want you to be absolutely bankrupt and really penniless and be out literally living underneath a bridge, because that doesn't help their cause any.
No, it don't.
Then you're not involved.
You're not a good little working bee. You're not doing anything.
Right. You're not a good little serf anymore.
Yeah, that makes no sense. Yeah,
you're no longer an involuntary servitude to them.
And then that leads to, we had another question, actually. I just, this is a matter of privacy, so it's as far as you want to take it, but I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be. You, as Michael Trudeau, what are you doing yourself to protect your finance, protect your interests and your property? Sure. Is there something we can go? Is there something you could tell us about that we may be able to do too to help?
Absolutely, I'll be happy to do that. And this is one of the things that you can look at. This is a real powerful aspect of this conversation, and that's this: there are things that we can do either as individuals, or we can actually do something where we step up to the plate as a group and try to hit the home run.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what you do as the individual, or here's what can be done as an individual to protect your own finances before they get pinned down into the computer system of the database, and it's just nothing but computer code now. And what I mean by that, and this is, I guess before we jump into that, is this part. Most likely case scenario of how it would happen is the way that it happened in 1933 when they confiscated gold to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They confiscated the bullion gold. All of the collector's coins were exempted. Reason being is because all of the people that were in the elite group last time packed trunks full of those coins, those collector's coins, and then when they were confiscated, when the gold was confiscated, they could legally still keep those ones. Once gold was confiscated in 1933, you had 30 days to turn in the bullion. On the 30th day, they raised the official government gold price from $20 an ounce to $35 an ounce. Thereby, Roosevelt and all of his cronies, every single ounce that they stashed of those collector coins went from $20 a piece to $35 a piece in value overnight. But now imagine the wealth that they just stole from the American public, literally overnight. So now that was done with the Executive Order 6102. The Emergency Banking Act comes into swing, and here's what they can do. Now, mind you, I guess when quoting the Emergency Banking Act, we should point out that it's still there. We tried to repeal it a bunch of times, and they won't allow it to be repealed. And that means that no legislation has to be enacted or anything, just simply with the turn of a key, they lock the banks and declare a bank holiday. They will do that on a Friday evening, right at the end of banking business day, and simply say, banks are closed, we've declared a bank holiday, you can't touch your money until Monday. When Monday comes, you'll all receive in the mail your new smart card. All of your currency will have to be converted to that smart card. But we've already taken the liberty of getting any of your other paper assets converted over, so they're already there. If you had stock portfolios, it's already there. So if you've got T-bills, bonds, IRAs, mutual funds, 401ks, you name it, anything in paper, they literally could convert it to code overnight, and you could not transact anything from those again without obvious tracking ability from the U.S. government.
Well, that's
or the Federal Reserve or what have you.
That's the day that scares me, because that's the day they have...
It should scare you, because it's not something that we're talking about as a fantasy or as some type of sci-fi scenario. This is something that's already occurred. They've already done it. And that was in 1933. Well, they've confiscated gold many times in this country's history, so don't think that they won't be able to confiscate your cash. That's already a foregone conclusion with that bank holiday. So prior to that occurrence, should that be the case, people would need to say, well, if that's the case, I can divest from these assets, these paper assets, and put the wealth, if you will, or the value into something else that would be storable or hideable. And, of course, the first thing that comes to mind for me, being that I'm a precious metals analyst and work for a precious metals company, is gold. I know it's got a 5,000-year track record. I know that an ounce of gold will buy the same thing today as it did 100 years ago, 150 years ago, 550 years ago, or 5,550 years ago. It will always buy the same thing, unlike the dollar, which continually loses that buying power. So right away, it comes down to the obvious math to me. I sit down with the wife, and we talked about this, and we said, well, let's take a look at what we've got in paper. So we went through all of those things, like T-bills, bonds, IRAs, whatever we might have had in paper, and said, what of this do we not currently derive income to live off of from? From those things that we separated from the income derivers, we liquidated all of it. And from that point, we turned it into gold coins. Now, once I did that, that became something that was automatically non-trackable, and here's why. Because now that I've got the gold coins in my hand, I could have walked down to the river and thrown them in.
Mm-hmm.
I could have walked through downtown Minneapolis and dropped them into the Salvation Army buckets outside of all the department stores over Christmas. I could have given them away to homeless people or buried them in my backyard. Or I could have come out to Michigan and buried them in one of your backyards.
Mm-hmm. Feel free to do that if you'd like.
I could have gone out to the desert and buried them, but the point being is that I could have given them to my kids. The government had no way to track what happened after that. So that was one of the personal benefits I gained from that right off the get-go, and knew I would. But the part I didn't quite realize, and the part that really hit home for me, was once I had done that, I had actually realized that I'd turned the tables on the Fed and the central banking cartel. What I had done is I had gathered up all of this paper that represented wealth, and I gave it back to them. And I demanded my wealth back, and they put it back in my hands in the form of gold coins. And as I'm looking at this, I realized, hey, I have in my hands the actual real wealth, and they're now holding the paper that represents wealth, not me. So right off the get-go, I realized that being that there's a fractional banking system or fractional reserve system, and so folks who may not understand what that means, it's basically this. You drop a $100 bill off in the bank's savings account, and the banker turns around and loans out $99 of it before you hit the door.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means, of course, is that the actual true wealth that's really within the system itself is very minimal. The rest has been floated out in loans on houses and so on. So once I realized that I had this chunk of gold in my hand, this amount, and it was representing the real value or the real wealth, that meant that it was off the playing field of the little banking cartel scheme. And I started to realize, man, if we could get 10-15% of the country to all at the same time do something like that, where they demanded the real wealth back and gave them the paper that represented the wealth, enough of the real wealth would be removed off of the playing field, and the central banking system's little Ponzi scheme would collapse on them. The people would be forced, well, at least at that point, would be allowed to be in a position to force the money back into our own system where we as the people create the money and it's made out of gold and silver again.
Well, that's just a giant run on the bank, basically.
But do you know what's interesting?
Mm.
The even the current rules and regulations would not have you transfer those gold coins to any other Social Security numbered person.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not supposed to give anybody any money or any wealth without it going through the system.
Well, yeah, it has to be
because they need to take their taxes
or cut. Well, you know what? Here's my answer to that. What I'm saying, of course, is that once I've gotten my money converted to gold, and that's private in my possession, it's private. They can't track what I'm doing with it anymore.
Right.
Now, of course, I'm an honest tax-paying citizen, and I always pay my taxes. End of story. I'm sure all of your listeners are as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, the both of you are as well.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
My point is that once I've converted that currency into gold, that has become private. It cannot be tracked by anyone ever again unless I decide to let them track it by telling them what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And that's important, too, because I think that the reason you would want to do that, of course, is to protect yourself.
Right.
Not to go outside. Not like, ooh, now I'm outside the system. You know, it's not a thrill or a rush to be outside
right.
the system.
Right. It's more of a protected measure. And understand this.
It's your right
to cash out of a when I cash out of a bond or a T-bill or an IRA or anything like that, if I've got gains, then I have to pay capital gains taxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
An IRA, if I cash out early, there's penalties and so
major
on.
Penalties.
And all of those things have to be paid. But then I started, well, this was part of the discussion that my wife and I had when we were doing this, is we looked at, her 401k as a discussionary topic or an IRA. And it was a matter of, can you imagine the penalty we get hit on if we take that out? We might lose half of that. And then the debate was, well, let's take a look at that statement for a minute. Since 1999, when the euro was introduced, the dollar has lost 34% against it.
Mm-hmm.
That's since 1999. So I asked her, I said, well, let me ask you on this IRA or this 401k, how much have you been making there? Because unless you're making a lot, you're losing it to the buying power by itself, just by the collapse of the dollar. So if it's the stock market and you got 401ks or something in the stock market or mutual funds, a lot of them have been absolutely crushed in the last 5 years. So those people have lost all of that wealth anyway, and if that had been moved out and put into gold, even with the penalties, the way gold's up now, you've got gold up over 50% in the last 3 years, you'd have made all that money back. But more importantly than that, that's the buying power remaining the same. The reason that you would have made all that money back is the way it would have appeared on the credit and debit sheets is the dollar would be weaker or stronger relationship to the price of gold. So obviously with the collapse of the dollar, gold prices are going up. It's not that gold is getting rarer as this is occurring. It's that the dollars are getting weaker and weaker and weaker. So it now takes more of the weaker dollars to buy the ounce of gold. Or the candy bar, or the gasoline, or the college education, or the health care, or name it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I'm thinking, though, is, well, for example, an IRA. We all know that, yeah, if you do try to do an early withdrawal on an IRA, you get crushed. They will take you apart by doing that.
Well, you know what's interesting about IRAs? The companies mm-hmm. there must be some kind of incentive for companies to have you have a 401k and things like that in IRAs. Well, I'm not talking about IRAs. I'm talking about 401ks.
Yeah.
What happens if you, usually if you'll put in like a dollar, they'll put in 33 cents.
They'll match you up to certain levels. Yep.
Yeah.
So they do this, and they want you to put your money into their. I mean, that's an incentive to use that as a storage of your wealth.
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely, because what you're doing is you're saying to your company, hey, here's a neat idea. How about if you guys hang on to all my money for me, and you guys get to invest it, and you can take a little interest off the top for yourselves, too.
Right. Let's make a deal.
Real happy to have you doing that, because they're going to make money off it.
They're going to make money off it, exactly. What I'm thinking, though, is like for an IRA, for example, I mean, you get nailed pretty hard if you try to do an early withdrawal.
Yep.
Is that a precautionary measure that's already been put in place by the people up top or, in the background?
I'm bailing out of it because it's an inconvenience factor to lose half your money off the get.
There you go. There you go. That's what I'm saying.
And you know what? You got to recommend to people when you if somebody comes up to me as an individual and says, should I cash out of my IRA? I can't just go yes or no. It's a lot more complicated than that.
Absolutely.
The obvious is you got to sit down and evaluate everybody's situation differently. So using an IRA, I guess, would have been a bad choice of one to just throw out there. But again, now that it's on the table, it's something to be looked at. If you're in a situation where that IRA is not going to make the difference for you retirement-wise, and you're sitting on it right now, and the dollar's declining at the rate it is, so you're losing the value of the dollars that are parked there as it is, and then you ask yourself, in 5 years, will cash still be here? Well, according to what the rate of decline is, no. More importantly is, will we have been moved to a cashless society by then, and guess where your IRA will be on that day?
In somebody's pocket, not mine.
Well, the obvious at that point is you have to ask yourself, how comfortable do I feel about all this?
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that the government might be up to nefarious acts? Do I really believe that that will be okay in a decade and nothing will have changed? And the money will still be at access, they'll still be printing currency, and I'll still have access to private transactions like I do today. A lot of people, aren't they, chipping the money and stuff? I've heard all about that. Yes, they are, as a matter of fact. They're microchipping our dollars. They're microchipping the euro dollars. They got all the security stuff in there so that you couldn't leave the country with it. The thing about it is they're trying to make sure that you cannot leave the country with all of this cash. You can't let up 50,000 jump on an airplane. All of the warning alarm bells will go off and say, hey, guess what? Scott's got 50K. Grab him before he gets on that plane. He's heading to Switzerland. So they'll stop all of that stuff. They've already done all that. And then the next trick is they'll just move us right in. If you believe that that's the case, then you'll really start to say, well, if I want to be able to maintain privacy, or if I want to be able to say I'm not going to take the tattoo on the back of my hand because I think it's the mark of the beast from the Book of Revelation, you're going to have taken steps in advance of that to protect yourself to a certain degree. And people who say, well, I don't really have any money. I can't invest in gold. First off, don't look at it as investing in gold. Look at it as parking your wealth there until this blows over or doesn't blow over.
Mm.
But more importantly is if you don't have anything, you can't do that, you should be thinking like, well, what's a roll of 1964 silver dimes run for? Junky ones. They're pretty cheap, $20-$30 a roll. So if that's all you got, do that. Because in a situation where you might want to trade outside of that cashless society, those silver dimes might allow you to do that.
Well, yeah, any type of...
Do that, then start thinking, well, every time I go to the grocery store, then I'm going to buy an extra bag of rice and an extra bag of beans and some, canned goods, and I'm throwing them in the basement until I have a stockpile. And then I'll rotate, as I use the stuff, I'll buy new and replace it.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things that you should be thinking about on a smaller level, then.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's the numbing thing. I think what other people are locked into also, what I've been thinking about through this discussion is, well, if I take my wealth and I move it over to gold, now it is increasing in value. I want to make that clear. Gold, I mean, it is...
Because of the decrease in
the actual paper.
It's because the dollar's dying.
And a lot of people don't know that. That's the problem
What happens if you have a gold piece, okay?
Okay.
Yep.
In order to actually buy milk and bread, you're going to have to convert it from gold into cash, aren't you?
Well, you wouldn't convert it from gold into cash because what you're going to be doing is using that as your medium of exchange. Right now, you and I, we and the grocery store down the road from you boys and from me, we all use paper dollars for our medium of exchange.
Yeah.
But when those paper dollars are gone, we will have one option or the other, which is you will either be in their society, in which case you still go to the grocery store with your smart card, or you go to the privately owned stores, the mom-and-pop stores, where they will accept either the smart card or... wink and a nod, they'll accept your gold and silver coins in exchange.
Yeah.
Because they know that everyone else in the block is exchanging. And a lot of people will be.
Right.
Well, what I think people are being flooded with, though, as far as media is concerned, is where, let's just say, for example, I take a big chunk of my savings account and I convert it over into gold. Let's just simple. Let's keep it real simple. I converted it over into gold. Now, a lot of people, like I was saying before, don't even know that gold is increasing in as far as its value goes. Okay.
Now, the way to look at this, and I'll tell you what,
I'm trying to
phrase
this.
You really can verify that because yeah. It's a really key point that you're on. Is this? It's not that the gold is increasing in value. It looks like it is because the price keeps going up. I mean, 3 years ago it was $252 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's in the $420s. So, wow, gold's really going up, man. Wow, I could be making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, you're not because the dollar is getting weaker. It takes more of the weaker dollars. Here's the best way to equate that.
Mm-hmm.
All right? When I was a kid, I'm 42. When I was a kid, my earliest childhood memory of the price of a candy bar was 10 cents. You could buy a candy bar for a dime when I was a kid. Today, 60, 70, 80 cents, depending on where you live.
Yeah.
So now, I have come to the conclusion then that chocolate, since it's six times, let's use 60 cents because that's about what the price is here.
Mm.
60 cents means that that chocolate is now six times rarer than it was when I was a child. Well, I know that's not the case. So then what I know must be the case is that it's taking six times more of the weaker dollars to buy that chocolate bar. Now, let's equate it to gold. Because when I was a kid, if I would have taken a dime when I could have bought a chocolate bar, if I could have taken that dime and bought the chocolate bar or bought 10 cents worth of gold and dropped that gold into a drawer, and now when I go to that drawer and pull it out today, the same little sliver of gold,
mm-hmm.
would have been tiny, mind you, I could still convert that back into the cash, which would have the same value enough to buy the candy bar today. And the better way to look at it is this way. The amount of gold that it would take you to buy a loaf of bread today is the same amount of gold that it would take to buy a loaf of bread 40 years ago, 140 years ago, 540 years ago, or 5,500.
And that's the track record you were talking about.
Yep. So that's the point to say, I get it in this respect. The gold will always buy the same thing that it ever did. And that's because it's produced with labor. It takes me, in order to find the gold, I've got to go down to the river, and I've got to pan it, and then I've got to mine it, and then I've got to refine it from there. So there's labor that's involved, and it's an amount of labor that can be actually based on something, the time factor, and so on. So now at that point, you can say, well, a man's labor is worth this much food. A man's labor, a man's day's labor, day's wages, day's labor, is worth this much toward his housing. And at that point, then, it would also be the same to equate it to how much gold he could own from that amount of labor simply by the labor it would take to produce it. So the gold never changes in its buying power.
And that's the track record. That's the track record that it maintains its value.
Right. So now look at it like this, because you guys are pretty young, and I am too at 42. I'm getting there, but I'm still to the point where I can't use this exact equation. But listen to this for a minute. Using their statistics of 50 years, 92% decline, what that actually means is if we could go back in time 50 years ago, and let's say we're, 15, 16-year-olds, so we're about ready to get a job. We're already smart enough to know that Social Security probably won't be there when we get to retirement. Or if it is, we'll certainly want to augment it. So at that point, since we're good-aged 16-year-olds, we're hardworking guys, we're making some dough, and we don't really use it because we're sapping off mom and dad yet. We start socking away some dollars in the drawer because we're smart enough to do it and figure, 50 years from now, when I'm 65, I'm going to yank that door open, and I'm going to start spending those dollars to help make things a little bit more comfortable for me in my retirement.
Well, you're going to need a bigger drawer.
We jump forward 50 years. We open up that drawer because it's retirement day. We're all happy. We're going to spend more time fishing and go to hockey games.
Yeah.
We rip open the drawer, and for every dollar that we socked away with our hard earning, with all that hard work, has now become 8 pennies.
Yeah, you're going to need a really, really, really big drawer.
Right, so
actually buy anything.
You go back again 50 years ago, and you're smarter than that. So now you say, well, I don't know if the dollar is going to hold its value. After all, it's just a piece of paper with a promise to pay. But I know that for the last 5,000 years, gold has. So instead of taking the dollar, you take the dollar and you buy the gold, and you put the gold in the drawer. Now today it's retirement day still for us. We open up the drawer, we take out the gold, and every dollar that we put there is still a dollar. It's not 8 pennies, it's still a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Now our buying power was protected. Every time we put a dollar in there, our buying power was protected as far as what we can convert that to now as far as currency is concerned or into goods and services. So that's why you would do it. I know that time is getting short for this, and there's one other aspect I got to point out to you guys, because every time I bring this up, people have that just, you got to be kidding me thing going on. I know that you guys have probably caught this, or maybe you heard me mention it already, but I want to make sure that your listeners have heard this, because this is one of those things like the Federal Reserve, with no fanfare, suddenly began converting all of the nation's money supply into code. Now they transferred over the wires.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of those. Last month, and what most people don't realize, it happened last month, but the national ID card was signed into law by President Bush.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys see any articles on that?
The one that I saw was not so much national ID, but I did hear a lot about that. But the one that is happening is the every government employee will now have the same ID card. Instead of, like, the FBI having an ID card, the IRS having an ID card.
Oh, that too.
Every employee. Now, what's the largest employer in the United States is the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
The way I know that is because every time there's a government holiday, but the rest of us working stiffs have to go to work, I know that my commute, instead of being an hour and a half, has become 50 minutes.
Yep, yep, and it's true. And they are the largest employer. Now a lot of people are, no, it's GM, or no, it's so-and-so.
No,
that's private
true.
Industry. I'm talking industry. Employers in general.
Well, you're quite correct. The largest employer of people in the United States is the government.
So what's going to happen is a huge portion of our population is suddenly going to have this ID badge.
Oh, no. Get this. You're going to have one, too.
Ah.
Well, I believe it's going to be a trickle-down effect if that's the case.
Well, here's the deal, guys. This is the part that's so serious about this national ID card. This thing has already occurred. Bush signed it into law last month. And what that means is that unlike a common driver's license, which you and I are using right now, it's going to have to be transformed into a kind of a national ID card. And you're going to love this part, because without it, you can't get on an airplane. Without it, you can't get Social Security. Without it, you can't get any government benefits. So they're not going to say you have to have a national ID card. What they're going to say is, that's cute that you boys kept your driver's licenses, and they're still valid, but if you want to get on this airplane, you're not using that. You'll need your national ID card. In addition to which, that already happened. It's going on right now in the UK as well, at the same exact time, and that's the part that people aren't catching, is that the Identity Cards Bill passed its second reading in the lower house on the 20th of December, and means it only has to go through the House of Lords, and then it becomes law there. Same national ID card. Only now it's for the entire UK, Australia, all of Britain, Canada, you name it, the United States. So basically, the entire Western civilized world will be under a national ID card with a snap of a finger. And nobody caught it because they didn't publicize it. It wasn't on Fox News or O'Reilly Factor or all these other shows. It wasn't blasted across every newspaper. As a matter of fact, it got slipped through very quietly. This is something that's really, really coming quickly. And one more time, they're not going to advertise this. They're not going to come to you and say, oh, by the way, this coming Friday, we're going to be declaring that bank holiday at the end of business. They're not going to say that. They're simply going to announce it on all the news stations. Bank holiday was declared at the close of business today.
They're just going to declare it?
Say it again?
Hey, we're going to have a, I mean, we got a job
they,
like
they
that.
They can do that.
We're going to declare a bank holiday today. Everybody go home.
Yeah, they can do that.
National Banking Act, or the Emergency Banking Act, says they can declare that bank holiday without my permission or your permission. It's already law.
I read on a website, because I was looking up low-power FM transmission, you know, which, of course, is a farce. But anyway, I was looking that up online, and it turns out they said that the United States has actually been under emergency powers since the 30s or 40s. I don't remember which.
Since 1933.
Since 1933. And when the World Trade Center crumbled in 2001, they made it permanent.
And that's absolute. As a matter of fact, that again gets back to that quote of Franklin's, which is, man, here's the deal. We just walked up and said, yeah, sure, you can have our liberties. Let me welcome that with open arms while I'm at it. Step right in. A national ID card, not a problem. You want to use my Social Security number for ID, even though you said you never would? Sure, that's not an issue either. The government's pretty ripe with going back in time, looking over their statistics and their history, with pretty much saying, well, we're never going to do this, and then doing it. So if the government tells you they're never going to do something, the first thing you should assume is, what date will it occur?
Yeah, when will it happen? Why didn't the states jump up and down and scream? Because it seems to me like identification was pretty much in the hands of the states, the 50 states.
Because now, of course, we've got the terrorists. We've got to protect ourselves from the evil terrorists.
Yeah, this is...
I'm a state that says no. Boy, am I going to be looked at as the bad guys.
Yeah, this is a knee-jerk government reaction. Actually, though, it's not knee-jerk. Sounds like they had it planned for a long time. Before we, because we've only got a few minutes left, I want to hear about News and Views with Michael Trudeau.
News and Views is a program that I started, interestingly enough, I started doing talk radio about 7 years ago. And then ended up originally starting off with building a network. As a matter of fact, you mentioned Alex Jones. He's one of the hosts that I put on air originally. And he's one of my little pet projects that started off a long time ago and has really, really hit the scene. He's done really well. He's a great friend. From little beginnings, you know, from small acorns grow large oaks, so to speak, comes this humongous entity. And after a while, it got to a point where there was just a little bit, let's just say, I didn't feel comfortable with ethically the way things were going with that, so I bailed from that and decided I've got to get out on my own and try it again. So what I did was I went back to the network where I started it all off. The Midas Report was the first radio program that we did on that network that was born that we built. And we actually started that off on a small, tiny little network station out in California called Truth Radio. And I called the owner of Truth Radio, I guess, a couple of weeks ago and said, listen, I'm available. And he said, oh, please, please, will you come and do your show again? And I agreed that I would come and do a show for him again. So I started a program there, I guess, about 2 weeks ago called News and Views. And you can view that or you can check it out if you want to live Monday through Friday. It's noon Central time, I guess, out where you guys are, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at truthradio.com. And, of course, there's a little bit more information up on our website, which is colonialresources.com. But the one thing that I do want to mention to all you guys is that, like I said, the one thing that you really need to focus your attention on is if they do this and they declare a bank holiday, it's too late for you to convert from that point your currency out of that system and get it into something that's private. So you're better off to do it before something like that would happen if it's something that you're not using again for income or something. If it's just a place where you've parked your wealth, then that would be a really smart thing to do because the gold, again, doesn't lose its buying power. And you can always convert it back into cash should you decide to, should they not go national ID or a cashless society using the smart cards. Or if they do and it's all fine and everybody's comfortable, you can still convert your gold right into their code as well. So it's not like it's a dangerous thing to do. It's a prudent golden parachute thing to do. We've got a lot of information that we can send out to anybody that's interested in it. We'll send that out free of charge.
Excellent. And they can get that info off of Colonial Resources?
Yep, you can request it right from the website, colonialresources.com. You can call us toll-free if you want, and I'll give you the toll-free number. I'll tell you, of course, there's nobody manning the station there tonight, but if you want to leave information on the voicemails with your name, address, phone number, we'll certainly send the packets of information out. But what we will do is we will send out information packets to anybody that requests it to explain better about how they can protect themselves financially. The number that you can call if you want toll-free is 800-685-4042.
Excellent.
Definitely call that number
if
you're interested in doing this.
Might as well get a free packet. And to me, personally, it just seems like when you do that kind of thing, you're keeping your options open.
Absolutely.
Right. And, I mean, the information pack that we'll send out certainly explains quite a bit more of this in detail. I mean, we can only cover so much in an hour and a half, and there's so much to talk about. We've just scratched the surface on it.
Yes, we have. So, anyway, but unfortunately, we do indeed have to we have to make way for W Paranormal to come up next on Pioneer.
Michael,
and
hold on the line for a second, okay?
Sure.
Yeah,
all right, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michael.
Yeah, Mike, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, it's been an absolute honor to be with you guys. You guys are obviously very sharp. You're way out of the curve, and I would be remiss by not recommending to listeners out there that they continue listening to the broadcast, because judging by what you guys got going on, I think they'll learn a lot.
We're honored to hear that.
The
from
whole
you.
Reason we started the show was so that we could learn as well. So,
and that's what we were doing today with you, Michael.
We were doing that with you today. So
amazing how that happens when you get together with guys like us who are all like-minded, how you can teach each other a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
It works out really great. So thanks, but hang on the
line. Hang on the line for one second, Mike. We're
hang
just going to close out.
And I'll have to say, bring down the... Yeah. So I have to say thank you very much, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, definitely.
Ghostly Talk is broadcast on Sunday nights from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
That can be found at pioneer.rolo.net.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, our own website is www.ghostlytalk.com. And tonight we had Michael Trudeau on.
ColonialResources.com.
There'll be a permanent link
in the hall of wonderful guests we've had. We have our honorary hall of links.
Right there on the homepage. So that'll be a permanent link. You go to ghostlytalk.com and you'll get to colonialresources.com from there.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have to make way for another excellent show that airs on Pioneer, and that would be W Paranormal. So that's going to be
interesting. Interesting angle this week, man. Mm-hmm. Interesting angle, but it's something different. But I think it was very important to talk about this kind of stuff, too.
And this is something that affects us and
everybody. It affects everybody.
So, all right, with that, I have to say thanks, everyone, for listening. I am Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Will.
And, of course, Karma will be with us again next week. We'll see you then.
Take care of yourself.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.